Mr. Lawson, are you?
I can get started and let everyone file in. Thank you. We are going to segue from land use to budget, and while it is the next thing on the agenda, it is critically important that we get through this presentation and eventually discuss and possibly introduce the ordinances that are required for this year's budget. So, as required by Title IX of the Delaware Code, I respectfully submit the proposed annual operating budget for Sussex County for FY27. The FY27 proposed budget was developed by the Administrator, the Finance Director and COO, Deputy Finance Director, Manager of Accounting and Financial Reporting Officer, all who have now joined us, having listened to all the hours of land use testimony prior. This recommended balanced budget was drafted after receiving submissions from county departments. We greatly appreciate their efforts in submitting their requests. We greatly appreciate their efforts of the directors and their staff in assisting us in producing a balanced budget. The FY27 total budget is $300 million, which represents an overall increase of $14.9 million. The increase is being driven largely by one-time capital expenditures in the capital fund and significant improvement projects in both water and sewer funds. These expenditures include improvements at the Delaware Coastal Airport, such as the runway extension and new taxiway, multiple major pump station rebuilds and upgrades to our water tower. And as any prudent government, the increases in operational costs have been held to inflationary increases. Guided by the council's priorities, this budget focuses on addressing some of the long-term concerns that we've brought before our county. There are funds to assist in workforce housing opportunities through settlement assistance, to provide support for businesses that want to expand and create jobs, to engage the public in future land use decisions through the comp plan land use process, to create a mechanism that funds capacity-related school infrastructure through a new building permit surcharge, and to support sustainability of the ambulance service by providing funding for additional ambulances and third-party billing. In closing, while the county's FY27 budget has new initiatives and priorities, it continues to preserve the long-term fiscal stewardship this government is known for. And now I will introduce Ms. Jennings, and she will walk you through the specifics of the FY27 budget, which I know she's very proud of because she's not going to admit it to you, but this year was a challenge and she deserves all the credit.
Absolutely agree.
I have a great team behind me, so they deserve credit too. Thank you guys. Nothing like a budget presentation to keep you awake, so I'll get you through this. So you'll notice that many of these slides you've already seen at the workshop. I've trimmed them down. I think I still have 60 slides to get through, but obviously the budget's very important, so we need to get through these. So we're going to quickly go through the successes. This PowerPoint is going to be available online afterwards so that the public can see it. But you can see the successes over the last fiscal year here. We want to dive right into the numbers so we can keep moving. So as Mr. Lawson has mentioned, we are seeing an increase in our budget of 5.2%. That's about $15 million. A lot of that is driven by one-time capital projects. What's important to note is, and we're going to focus a lot of this on the general fund, our general operations, and stay in line with inflation at 3.6%. So move right on to the general fund. So how are we balancing a budget when it is increasing $3.6 million? Well, there you can see it right there, the first two blocks. First, we're adding realty transfer tax. That's a $2 million increase up to $39 million. Use of reserves, $1.6 million. That's an increase of 14.5% increase up to $12.8 million. We are seeing a slight uptick in revenues, building-related revenues. And you'll see part of that has to do with we are increasing fees, but we are seeing increases in recorder deeds office as well. One thing we are going to dive into is the tax revenue. This is a concern of mine that our tax revenue is only increasing $130,000. Normally, this is over a half a million dollars, somewhere around $600,000. But due to reassessment, we're not seeing the increase that we normally would see. And then grant revenue is just the timing of when we're spending our grants, and then interest revenue, there's no change on our reliance there. So what percentage is these revenues supporting our expenses? So most of it is realty transfer tax. You can see there that's 36% of our budget is balanced with realty transfer tax. The next is taxes at 22%. That includes property taxes, fire services, and the fire service, the revenue that's on the building permit and the accommodations tax. And our charges for services, that's 13%. The next chart, I just want to jump over there real quick, is important to show our reliance on these types of revenues over the years. So this trend chart here starts back 10 years ago in 2018, and you can see we balanced the budget in 2018 with 29% realty transfer tax, and this budget is 36%. So we have slowly increased our reliance on realty transfer tax. At the same time, our reliance on taxes has decreased down to 22% from 24%. We did have a jump there in 2021, and that's when the accommodations tax came online. The next line that I want to point out is our charges for services. Our charges for services, we need to make sure that we're covering our expenses. So you'll see an increase in building permit fees, but that's because we need to cover our services. Another concern as we're building the budget for this year, we can see a decline in our building permits. So that blue line is total permits. That it could include dwellings, residential, commercial, pools, decks, any small permits. They are expected to decline at 10%. But then I take a deeper dive, because obviously the pools and decks don't generate that much revenue. What generates our revenue is the commercial, the residential, and the dwelling permits. So the first line, that yellowish-orange line, is the residential permits. Those would include multifamily homes in addition to the dwelling permits. We are seeing a 17% decline in the number of permits there. But now if you look at our dwelling permits, there's a 25% decline in dwelling permits from 2025. Now, these are pretty good numbers. We still have 2 months left of the fiscal year when I had pulled these, but I'm usually pretty close when I'm pulling. I pull these projections every year to see how close I am, but we're going to be within a couple percentage points by the end of the year where we fall. The chart that I do every year, because we rely so much on realty transfer tax, is this chart here, just to show you over time how much it has fluctuated. And what is very important to point out is our 2027 budget's at $39 million. But if you go back as far as 2020, we were not collecting that $39 million. So we did have that extra surplus coming in, but now we're relying on hoping that we can collect that much revenue to be able to make operations. I also pull different activities, how each of the departments, how busy they are. So we'll just go through a few here. The constable complaints, this is a good thing when their complaints are down. You can see year over year, we've had complaints going down. We did implement a fine system that seems to have been working, so we do not have repeat offenders. You'll see building inspections are going down. That trends with the other two charts that you have just seen, where there's a decrease over last year at 12%. Bills issued continue to increase. We are constantly bringing on new sewer customers, and for every one sewer customer, we generate 4 additional new bills because we do quarterly billing. So there's an increase there. Deeds are staying flat, but you can see all the way back in 2023 where that number was at 62,000. That was when interest rates were a lot lower and people were refinancing. So it has leveled off on deeds. And then the next one, register wills is, depending on the value of the estates when a person passes away, that number can fluctuate. Over time, though, that has increased with our population. And the next three items are all water and sewer related. And you can see they're also impacted by the rate of development. So as I mentioned before, we are balancing the budget with the use of reserves. Every year you do see that we do use reserves, because what that does is some of the savings that we collect in previous years, we do save up for purposes to use in the future, such as the commendation tax. We collect about $1 million a year, but we don't spend that $1 million. So over time I collect it and then have to put that in as a use of reserves. The ones that we need to focus on are the ones that council wants to continue to do year after year, and that we're balancing the budget on reserves. So open space, we are having reserves, so that's what we're using open space for. But if we don't continue to have those reserves, open space might not be able to be a priority. The second reassessment, that is coming up. I put in reserves for it. It was council's objective the last reassessment to only use savings for reassessment. But going forward, since it's a five-year mandate now, we're going to have to come up with some type of revenue to help pay for those costs. And the trap pond project, that is just an ongoing expense that we've had in the budget, waiting for them to start the project and ask for those funds. The housing trust fund is also using savings as well. Not too long ago, before we had gotten the ARPA funds, we had balanced, we usually put $250,000 in that account. But with the rise in money that we have with realty transfer tax and we can use it, we have upped that amount, and that's what we're using there to give the community development office more money. And then we also had another project that's carrying forward as well. We'll get into the capital projects fund, but you'll see that the capital projects are mostly funded by our reserves.
When it comes to use of reserves, just a little perspective. For a budget our size, what is reasonable, prudent reserves?
So you want to keep in, I would always say, is 20 to 25%.
20 to 25%.
Correct, of your budget.
Your budget. And mm-hmm. At this point, what are our total reserves?
Well, our general fund is healthy.
Right.
Very healthy. It's our water and sewer, which is using those funds.
Which is enterprise funds, separate.
Correct.
As far as general funds.
Correct.
We're balancing the budget on reserves. We're actually using excess reserves.
Correct.
Not reasonable, prudent reserves.
Correct. We have, like I said, some of those line items we purposely will always have reserves to put in the budget to use.
So the point being that we are not a bank. We are not a private organization. We are a governmental entity. This money is tax dollars that belong to the people and
right.
Should either be used or returned, but not building up savings year over year over year.
Correct.
In my opinion.
Correct. Right.
I mean,
and that's what we do. Is
and that is what we do.
Right. So when we do have a surplus, just like your open space capital projects as well, is that we put it in $5 million. That's a big money, but that's because we have gotten the reserves in the prior year
so
to be able to do that.
Are sound.
Correct.
I agree.
Will the reserves come from the general fund or realty transfer tax? Or tax collections or realty transfer tax?
So realty is part of general fund, and yes, they come from realty.
So
as
we're getting
our savings is realty transfer tax. Now, I can spend, and what I need to do is every time an expense comes that qualifies for realty transfer tax, I use realty transfer tax before I use tax dollars. So if we do have an emergency, I have a rainy day fund that I can spend it on whatever we needed at that time. Hopefully that made sense.
Just a little perspective. I mean.
So that $100,000, I do want to, it's a very important note why we're not seeing the growth that we normally see in our revenue and our tax base. So one thing is obviously our dwellings are down, so you won't see it in the growth there, but that's not the big thing. Before reassessment, there was more value in improvements. They were 85% of a whole, you know, land with a house, 85% of that was improvements. After reassessment, they were 65%. The land value has gone up significantly since 1974. So when you build a house, it's not impacting that entire package as much because that land is worth more. But what has really, really has shifted our values is the value to the beach. Those oceanfront properties have picked up a lot of value, and that is less of where the development occurs, obviously, because that's where it's already been developed. So just west of Route 1, that's where most of the development's occurring, but the value had all shifted to the beach. So where everybody's tax bill, 75% of everybody's tax bill had gone down, that was great, but it doesn't help with moving forward with growing our tax base. So I have that example here. We pulled Millsboro properties and Bethany Beach properties because that was in the Indian River School District. So before reassessment, 1.5 new properties in Millsboro, where it is our biggest growth area, it would equal a one beachfront property value. After reassessment, it takes 4.5 properties now to equal one beachfront property. So in other words, you have to build more homes to actually adjust our assessment like it used to. And then the chart, and on the, over on the right, you can see that I had given this to the state of Delaware just to show that those three maps there that are circled on the beach, how we had a big shift just in those three areas of the county. They went from 45% of the value to 55% of the value after reassessment. So sticking with the general fund, we have some proposed changes in fees and charges. We are going to get into the building permit and school surcharges on those building permits, so I won't spend any time on it here. We do have some changes in building code and planning and zoning. We took a serious look at some of our fees, making sure that we're covering our costs. What is a customer asking us to do where we didn't normally charge for that? We are now going to start charging. So if building code goes out there and the builder needs another copy of their plans, we're going to charge them $120 because it takes staff time to re-review those plans, make copies. So we need to start recouping some of those costs. And you can see some other ones here, the public hearing re-advertisement. A lot of these are from the applicant's request or an error that an applicant has made. We usually have taken that and just charged them the cost of re-advertising, that, what the paper charges. But it does take staff time now to contact the paper and re-advertise. We want to make sure we're covering our costs there as well.
How about Clerk of the Peace? Are they covering themselves yet? Or
Clerk of the Peace is not, no.
Still not?
Still not.
We need to look at that again? Or
it's yes. I go with the elected official, what they choose, but we did raise their fees, I believe it was last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In my opinion, they should be covering their own expense.
And then down at the bottom, we have the street naming fee for the graphical information officer office. A lot of times the developer will come in and ask for some names, we'll give them those names, and then they want us to check those names again and get, so once we've given you the first round, we're going to start charging you after that to cover the costs. So now moving on to building permits, I have 10 slides on building permits. This is a big chunk of the presentation. So just to give you the history, if you remember, when the new council was sworn in, they wanted to have a discussion on having a school fee on the on new development. So that discussion started with the VSA mechanism through the state, or adding a percentage to the building permit. Our building permits needed to be looked at first before we started adding another fee. So we had a cost study completed, making sure that we're charging correctly the cost on our building permit and it's being charged fairly before then we start adding the fee. We did have some builder engagement on our new methodology. The next steps are what we're going through right now. We're reviewing that methodology, establishing the new rates, and then discussing that building permit ordinance, which we'll talk about today. And then we have the objectives of this whole project was, want to make sure we cover our costs. You're going to hear a theme here. I keep saying that.
I'm getting it.
Streamline calculations. You'll see that our building permit counter, you know, over time, you know, we've obviously grown and it was a lot easier to do the calculations, but we're trying to simplify things so that we can have people do things online, and there's a much better way of doing things when we take a look at it. We want to realign with the work performed, so if it takes staff 2 hours, we're charging 2 hours of time for that. And then we want to make sure that if they're building a dwelling, they're being charged correctly for a dwelling versus a commercial project. So when we did the cost recovery analysis, you can see that the building permit revenue is in the second column, and then the expenses related to pulling those building permits and to see where we are. And you can see going back to 2023, we were pretty much covering our costs. We were right in line. But as we move out, obviously some of our building permits have come down and costs are continuing to rise with inflation, and you can see that we're starting to create a deficit in our building permits. So looking at 2026, we're almost done there. You'll see we're running probably about a $400,000 deficit right now with our building permits. If I project out the next 3 years using a 10% decrease in the first year, in 2027, and then holding it steady, and then increasing expenses about 3%, you'll see over time we're going to grow to be about $1.3 million in the hole on covering our building permit costs. So that's a 76% cost recovery. So we want to make sure as we are building the new permit, we're going to cover those costs. And as I mentioned, it's a very complicated calculation right now, and it's per square foot. So if it's a single family home, it's $55 a square foot. If you added another bath, you're adding $700. There's all of these different mechanisms and things to come up with a total cost of construction. Obviously, $55 a square foot is an outdated number. However, things like commercial apartment buildings, duplex and townhomes, were based off of today's costs. So dwellings kind of stayed stagnant while other projects had continued to grow over there, and they're the ones that were picking up the costs. So we kind of have to rebalance that before we start adding another fee on top of it. So what we've decided to use is an already established rate from the International Code Council. They publish their data every August. So using August 2025 numbers, you can see where we use $55 a square foot, building a residential property, they suggest is at $170 a square foot. So we were off just a little bit. So what we're suggesting in the first year is to take 75% of those numbers, and then next year we'll move to 100%. But the first year, let's step it up. So we'll be charging $128 a square foot, or at least that would be our estimate on the construction rate. And do that same for other things, garage, pole barns, decks, all of those numbers you can see there to come up with the cost of construction. For because on the building permit, it's cost of construction times a rate, just like we did with reassessment. So now that we're bringing all these costs up, we're going to have to bring those rates down. So talking about the rate side of things now, and this is where we're trying to simplify things. Over on the left is the current fee schedule today. On the right is the proposed fee. On the left, you'll see if somebody came in and they needed another plan review. Depending on the type of review, it was either $30 or $60. Well, it's gonna take at least an hour for any kind of review. So we're gonna charge both $60. Gonna make that a lot more streamlined there. Building permits. You'll see there was a structure here. It was $7.50 or $5 for the first 1,000, depending on if you had zoning code or you did not have zoning code. We're streamlining it to say it's $5 for the first 1,000, because that extra $2.50 is just not worth anything anymore. And then lower the cost per 1,000. So where it was $3 per 1,000, it's now $2.50, and where it was $2, it's now $1.50. So we brought construction values up, but we brought the rate down. So we're not bringing in as much revenue as we would if we kept the rates the same, because we still want to just cover our costs. We're not here to make money. It's not what the goal is here.
Right. How much is this going to add to the cost of a house? Like $200 or $300 maybe?
Or? Yeah, about five, depending on the size of the house.
Obviously,
yeah. I would say on about $500 for this piece of it.
Right. We got to break even on that. I mean, it's...
Mm-hmm. Now, commercial will go down, but where we were not getting the money was the dwelling side, and that is where we're spending a lot of our time. And then same thing with the fire service fee. Their percentage goes down to make sure that they're still collecting the same amount of money as they did prior to adjusting those rates. And then this fee schedule here, again, I just want to show how we're simplifying things moving forward. We used to have this huge tier depending on the square footage of the house. Talking with building code, you know, an extra 500 square foot is not taking that much more time. What really matters if it's one story, two story, if it's attached to another residential because of fire safety issues. So we streamline that as well. So the residential permits is now, it's just one that under 1,000 square feet, up to 3,000, then over 3,000. And then if you're attached residential, and you can see that that will be it there moving forward, making it a lot easier. So now what happens? So as you can bet, dwellings are going to bring in a lot more revenue. So that second column there is what I did was I took calendar year 2025 building permits, every single one of them, and I recalculated them based off of the new fee schedule to see how it impacted each type of permit. So you'll see a dwelling permit, they brought in 1.7 million. In the new proposed way, they're gonna bring in 3.1. Now this is based off of, again, activity based off of calendar year 2025. We know that activity is slowing. Okay, the ones in the blue are the ones that we're gonna see go up. So accessory structures, they were on the outdated list. This is gonna be based off of current construction costs. But the ones that are not in blue, you're gonna see them go down. So additions, accessory dwelling units, that's gonna be depending off if it's based off square footage or based off renovations, they could go up or go down. Commercial's gonna go down. Farm structures are gonna go down. But in the end, what's important here is at the very bottom, at the total, you'll see it's an extra $1.2 million if we were basing it off of 2025 activity. And if you remember, going back a few slides, that is the deficit I am projecting going forward in 2029.
I feel like I might should know the answer, but why is there no revenue for manufactured homes under fire?
Because they get a mobile home placement tax
that
goes to the libraries. So this is the fire fee. They don't get that. They get this different type of tax that goes to the libraries.
Right, but nothing for fire.
But not for fire. But none of these other buildings go to libraries.
All right.
So it's just the way it was set up that mobile homes specifically has this placement tax that goes to libraries instead of the fire fee. Yeah. Good question. And then, which brings it to a good point, if you look at the fire, you see, like I said, I'm coming up with a rate that's very similar to if that was set back in their 2025 activities, they'll bring in a very close number amount, slight increase, about $100,000 more using that new rate. All right, so some specific comparisons. This goes to the question that you had down at the bottom, the dwelling permit. I picked 2,000 square feet home. It's going to see about a $500 increase for that shift. But you'll see up the top where the commercial, where they'll see the decrease because they were based off of current costs today where dwellings were not. All right, so now that we got our building permit fee straight, now let's talk about that school surcharge fee on top of the building permit. So the proposal, which we do have an ordinance today to introduce, if you'd like, is that it would apply for all permits above $150,000. This was structured off of Kent County's ordinance. Now, Kent County uses the old $55 a square foot. We're not doing that. So it makes sense that our number would go up. Non-residential commercial permits would be up to $1 million, just like Kent County. We would have exemptions in the program. Anything that's funded with DSHA, improvements through the Sussex County rental program, any nonprofits, any building structures that have to do with agriculture or public safety, and anything for just replacement over the 24 months if something was destroyed and you're just rebuilding that and within 24 months, they would be exempt too. That came right from Kent County's ordinance as well. So the process is the rate is established in the budget for both the local school and Sussex Tech. So if you look at the budget ordinance, there is a section in that ordinance that says, if you adopt this code, this is what the fee is gonna be. This way we don't have to amend the budget or anything like that going forward if you don't do the ordinance, but it's ready to go. It is a section in the ordinance. The funds will be collected and put into an account for each of the school districts. The schools would then file an application with the county to identify a capacity-related capital improvement project. And I do want to point out that I've added capacity related to these slides because of the discussion at the workshop, that we wanted to make sure they focused on capacity related, and that has been added to this, the draft ordinance. Funds will be distributed annually through the budget process. So the schools would apply, we would put it in the next year's budget so that way they can get the funds. Qualifications for funding, the school district has capacity related capital improvements. They're eligible for state matching funds pursuant to a certificate of necessity. Proceeds have been qualified as matching funds for the applicable project.
There's no way they can use it for anything else?
Not the way the ordinance is written today. It's capacity related. Now, what we could do is if it starts building up, we obviously, just like you said, we don't want to be a bank and just continue to hold money. We could always adjust it at that point.
Once we release the money to the schools, they have no ability to use it for other things.
Correct, correct. They have to apply and show that where it is. And they're applying to the Department of Education to show there's a need and this is what they're going to be building with the state funds as well.
That's a pretty regulated transaction when they're building a school. I mean, very closely monitored.
Makes me feel more comfortable with it.
So the recommended rate in this budget is $5 per $1,000 of construction value. The way it's divided up is $4.70 would go to the local school district and 30 cents would go to Sussex Tech. Again, that was just built on just like Kent County. Kent County uses $12.50 per 1,000, but again, remember their construction values are a lot less, so that's why their rate would be a lot higher. Kent County collects about $2 million a year on their building permits for something like this. Where did the $5 then come from? So I ran the numbers using Kent County's formula before I changed the building permit formula and saw that we would collect $7 million. So then I backed into that number using the $5 rate to still collect $7 million off of same as Kent County's ordinance. That's where it came from. So estimated charges, obviously it's gonna impact the dwellings the most based the way it's written, anything over 150,000. Then it'd be townhomes, commercial. There will be some structures that are still hitting that $150,000 mark, but it's not as much as you can see here. This again is based off of calendar 2025 permits. Using that, based off of those permits, you'll see each of the school districts how much they would have collected then annually. It's a total of $7 million with CAPE and Indian River collecting close to $3 million.
It's only on the excess over 150.
No.
On dollar one?
It's on dollar one, right.
Once it hits 150, it's
all of it.
Dollar one.
Correct. You got it.
Okay. And you're trying to exclude sheds and pole barns?
All this, right. Pole barns, the small projects is what it's excluding. Correct. So now we go back to that original table and how does it impact each of these projects adding that school fee? So you'll see some of them have $0. Delmarva Christian School, being a nonprofit, would be zero. You'll see the retaining wall, the accessory structure, the average swimming pool, they're all zero because now they're under $150,000. And then the commercial, they're capped at that $1 million mark at $5, which is $5,000. So you see there how it impacts. Again, I always want to go back down to the bottom, the 2,000 square foot home, saying that that's an average size home in Sussex County, and it's going to cost about another $1,400 with the school fee. So with the building permit adjustment and the school fee, it's an extra $1,900.
You mentioned the SCRP in a previous law had been excluded. Is that the, let's say we, you know, if we went with 15%, would that just be the 15% of the units would be excluded? The 85% market rate would be paying the impact?
Correct. It would be only the ones that are in the program.
The actual SCRP units. Okay.
Correct. Yes. All right. That's the revenue side of general fund. Now moving on to the expense side, you'll see where the increases are in the budget, where that extra $3 million that we talked about earlier. You'll see the biggest percentage change is in supplies. That is really, half of that has to do with paramedic supplies. They're buying a video medical machine. That's what that is there, and computer prices have gone up as well. The next largest increase is grant and aid. We will get into that, but if you remember, we are putting extra money in for the ambulance companies for billing services and to purchase 3 ambulances a year. That's what that is there, along with our DSP MOU. I'm seeing an increase as well. And then we'll get into personnel having a 5% increase, but that is health insurance costs, merits, and COLAs. And looking at our increase differently, just seeing it by department, what departments have increased more than our inflation. And you'll see a lot of this is software related. This should make us a lot more efficient in some of these offices going forward. You'll see there's, see what else I have in here. I have the security here, and then the grant and aid, of course, the $3.1 million, again, back to the ambulance funding, and the accumulation of the accommodations tax as well. All right, we do focus on employment costs because that is about 50% of the cost in the general fund budget, and you'll see the cost of the pension fund. We are very well funded, but we do still have costs that we have to cover. So we contribute every year to that pension fund. We have average salary merits of 2%, a cost of living adjustment at 3%. When I did this slide during the workshop, inflation was at 3.3%. I know it has gone up again this past month as well. And then our health insurance costs continue to rise. We are going to offset some of those increases by asking employees to pay more in their premiums and their copays, and then also looking at our retirement healthcare plan as well. And again, staffing is still the biggest cost, so we do look at our trends to see how we're doing. And you'll see that that dotted line is keeping everything consistent at 2009. That was when our lowest employment was. And then you can see what happened was, well, last time that our employment was higher, you'll see that our, obviously our population's gone up, that is the blue. You'll see that our overall county employment, which does include public safety employees, has kind of stayed relatively flat. I mean, you'll see over time, we've obviously increased. But what the yellow is showing you is that most of the orange is related to public safety. So where we will lose positions in just general government, we'll replace those with public safety employees, which is exactly, again, what we're doing this year as well. So we are remaining flat overall, but we are including 2 public safety employees, 2 street medics. But we are reducing positions in accounting and the finance department. And then we're also losing a position as a rehab specialist because this was an ARPA-funded project. And then we knew over time we were going to have a retirement in there. We are including, because of the comp plan and all the land use issues that you guys are addressing, adding another position in planning and zoning as well. But overall, the count still stays at flat, 0. All right, grant and aid. So we are seeing an increase of 10.9%. It's a $32 million department budget. Most of it is in public safety. We are seeing a $2 million increase. Again, this is part of the initiative. We are implementing the FACETS study and their recommendations, where we are taking over or helping to take over their billing services, their accounting function, and then also purchasing 3 ambulances each year so that it guarantees that each ambulance or fire company will get at least 1 ambulance every 7 years.
So what's that, about 1.5 a year for the ambulances?
Yeah. 1.2 is what we're expecting, about $400,000. And then the rest of it would be the billing services.
I hope that helps. I really do. I think it will.
I hope streamlining everything is going to help. We will see. It's worth a shot. Accommodations tax, again, we accumulate those on the $1 million collection, and the upcoming budget gets added to that. Libraries, they're 10% of our budget. They're going to see an increase of $140,000. I have a slide coming up. Economic development, seeing a $12,000 increase. This amount goes right to return day. So in an election year, you'll see that that goes up every other year. Open space, we're going to remain at the increased level. We'll talk about that coming up. And then you can see the smaller parts of the grant and aid on that slide. So public safety, you'll see we have a total of $15.6 million in our public safety partnerships. The total here on the chart shows $15 million. It does not include the $750,000 to Dewey Beach to help with our county EMS space for their new building. That's the difference between those two numbers. You will see that our state police contract continues to grow. The last 3 years, we added two new troopers every year, so for another six new troopers. So our MOU is bringing in 50 additional state troopers to Sussex County for a total of $6.1 million. Local law enforcement, we increased that amount the last 3 years as well, from $690,000 to $1 million. You'll see the increase in fire from $6 million to $7.6 million. And then you'll see the total cross and the total increases year after year, what we're seeing, how we support public safety. So our economic development grant, what makes up that $2.6 million is the $2.5 million for the Excite Sussex Loan Program. We'll put money aside, and if businesses qualify, that money is there where we can loan out. It's just a revolving loan fund. They'll pay it back over time. We give money to the World Series. Town assistance grant is if they don't collect a certain amount of realty transfer tax, towns would qualify. The return day and Wings of Wheels are in that account. So the library grants, I do have in the budget for them to get a 5% increase. As I mentioned at the very beginning of the presentation, they would typically have not seen as big of an increase this year because they expect the improvements just like we do. You get more improvements, you get more library tax revenue. Well, they didn't get to realize that as much as we would hope. So I did increase how much they rely on property tax this year to bring it up to a 5% increase. And you can see over time, they do get an increase every year. It does usually align pretty well with inflation. Community assistance grants, there's a bunch of grants in these programs. There is nothing new here. What we have given over, there is one thing. There's Bay Health Capital is the new grant that is in this one. They did present to you a few months ago on their capital campaign. But what is not new is that we typically do help our hospitals through their capital campaign. We usually give them $100,000 and we divide it up over 4 years. And that's just the first year there.
Are we spending that whole 50 for the litter cleanup?
We are not. It is there. It originally started at $90,000, and over time we have lowered it in hopes that they would have more help at the Department of Corrections to be able to spend that.
It'd be nice if we could.
Yes.
Do more.
We do have an active link on our site asking for road cleanup, and then we do send it over there and try to get some overtime and pay for overtime to clean
the
street.
Weather shelter grant, is that Code Purple exclusively or anything else?
It is for anybody. We open it up every year for people to apply, but it is Code Purple shelters that are open only a certain part of the season to help the homeless. Yes. Oops. All right, agriculture and drainage. This is mostly the Sussex County, the Conservation District. You will see over time, we have increased, especially last year. You can see the 26 budget and then the 25 budget to the 26 budget where we've increased it. And we kept it the same as the 26 budget. And then the Sussex Extension Program that the University of Delaware has, In 2025, they had a capital project going on. That's what that extra $60,000 was. All right, open space. I have the 2.4 million highlighted there because we're talking about the operating side of things. This is where you do partnerships mostly with the farmland preservation. Last year you asked me to increase this a million. I kept that extra $1 million in there for the $2 million. And then there's also $5 million in for open space as well. But we're gonna focus on the farmland preservation of the $2 million. And what's interesting here is you can just see over time the commitment that council has had and with the increase, including in this past year, 2026, where it was 1.9 million, close to that $2 million that's been in budget. Over on the right, you can see over time, the program started in 2003. So going to 2008, we preserved 2,471 acres. 10 years later, added 576 acres, and then currently we added another 2,863 acres on top of what was preserved in 2018. All right, moving on to capital. As I mentioned earlier, when I looked at the reserve slide over on the right, we're gonna get into where those reserves are being spent. And right here, that's how our capital project funds are funded. So we do have surpluses year after year. I do move them over to capital so that we can continue to fund our capital projects without going out and getting a bond and getting debt on our books. So most of our funding comes from reserves. We do get federal and state funding to help with some of the capital projects, specifically at the airport. And then we do have some investment income that we do to balance the budget. So our five-year capital projects plan, you can see in 2027, it's a $29 million plan. And over 5 years, we have $107.6 million projected out for 5 years. You'll see the majority of it is in our airport and industrial park. It's 62% of that of our five-year costs are related to the airport. Just picking out some of the bigger projects, you can see there's $5 million for stormwater management. That is to help with stormwater credits. We have a master plan at the airport. Once that is built, we'll be able to fulfill that master plan moving forward. And then we do have the land acquisition where we actually purchased the land and not did the partnerships here with the extra $5 million.
That 25, the annex building is this one back here, not the one on the highway, right?
Correct. It would be the building back here where the court is currently that we have not bought yet. Part of that money that says administrative annex building is to purchase that building once it gets vacated.
Right.
All right. Now, this is the capital side of the open space, so a very similar slide that you just saw. But you can see how active, again, council has been with open space since 2019. This started back in 2003 with partnering up with the Land Trust, and then we've been very active the last 6-7 years here. And you can see since 2018, we preserved an additional 1,082 acres, so over the last 8 years. And there's another $5 million because I do expect that we will have extra realty transfer tax collected this year that I can budget it and move it forward for next year. Okay, we're getting close. The operations budget for sewer, this has increased over inflation, but this has to do with their capital improvements, especially the pump station rebuilds. There's $7 million in there. So you can see right there where it says capital and there's $5 million. Most of that, if not all of the increase, has to do with pump station rebuilds. Personnel costs didn't go up as much here because we moved somebody from sewer over to water, and then we're allocating some of those funds back through the administration piece there as well. Other professional services, though, might stand out with a 93% increase there. This is the work order management system that has been brought before you, and you have voted on to move forward with that to be a little more proactive in maintaining our assets. So some of the financial facts of our sewer fund and why I am asking for an increase in the rates is that year after year, we are showing operational loss. But what's important to note here is this is not fund accounting as far as the general fund, and it uses modified accrual with no assets. They do have assets. They have depreciation. So the operating loss is very close to what the depreciation is in those financial statements. So what I do is I look at what the interest is, which isn't part of operating revenue, and also connection fees that we collect, which is not in operating revenue. We use a lot of connection fees to improve those assets. So I need to make sure that what we're bringing in also is covering that loss as well. So yes, the statements look a little scary when you see that loss, but there's other factors that are not at that bottom line that you have to see to look at the full financial picture. We have cash balances. So this is where we don't have the 25% that some of that general fund is covering when we look at our AAA bond rating.
Is that adequate?
It's adequate on the big picture scale, it is. It's not adequate because I want funds to be self-sustaining, so if there's like an emergency or anything that,
right.
Hence my ask for an increase in the fee. So I wanna bring it up. So this is going to cover the extra $7 million that we need to balance the budget, but we've increased fees in the sewer, I think at least good 7 years at this point. To start building up that reserve that we
can. What do you want to build your reserve to?
So it still should be, I still want to see that 20 to 25% of their budget. And we're at 6.
Got some work to do.
We do. But we also look at covering costs,
cutting costs that we can.
Exactly. We do bring on customers that are helping as well. Economies of scale helps. There's multiple things happening here that helps with that number. That's where the 10% increase is coming from. It's an extra $3 million, but we are using $7 million of connection fees to help balance the budget. But that is for specifically those capital pump station rebuilds, that it's what it's supposed to be for.
Right.
So again, there's four main things that are driving costs. Those pump station replacements, optimizing our pumps, really, personnel does not drive sewer operations like it does general fund. It's really those big assets that we have. Chemical costs continue to rise, and then that new asset management system, we have a lot of extra funds in there that will eventually go away when we have our new SOPs in place and the actual asset management system up and running. There is one fee increase besides the extra increase in the sewer rate and the water rate. But this is a fee outside that engineering is asking for. It's for constructability, site conditions. You approve the tier one, this is the tier two, it's an extra $1,000. What happens is they'll get out to some type of construction site and there'll be a electrical pole in the way where they build it. And now they want the plans to be all changed up. Well, we need to charge you for having to look at those plans again. It shouldn't have been just that one fee we charged you. You should have known that there was gonna be a pole there before you submitted your plan. So that's what this is doing, is covering that cost. Moving over to water, huge increase. Dollar-wise, water is a really small budget, but percentage-wise, this is a very large increase, and it's for one reason. And the one reason is the water tower that we own and maintain. It's time that it needs to be repaired and upgraded. And you can see in utilities, other contractual services, where that expense is, and it pretty much equals the total increase. The increase in personnel, as I just mentioned on the sewer slide, we did move a employee over there from the sewer, and that's why that cost has gone up. And the big operational challenges that we have with the water system is regulatory burden. Water is very highly regulatory, new requirements year after year. And there's a supply limitation on where we get the water, so we purchase our water, and when the rates come from the city of Rehoboth or Artesian, we just pass those rates on to our customers. And yeah, obviously,
sell the water system back to Dewey County.
No, because they voted us in, so they have to vote us out. So we're seeing double percent increases from City of Rehoboth and Artesian, which is now what's causing us to have to pass those costs on to our water customers. Same kind of similar scenario here on the water. We do see operational losses, but again, most of that has to do with depreciation. We did actually show income last year, but that was by design, because we knew that we were going to have this capital project come on, and we wanted to start building up those reserves. We did. We had 37% of operating budget, so we were above that 25% mark, but we knew we were going to, it was coming. Time was coming, and now it's coming. So we're going to spend those reserves to do the water tower, but we are going to ask for a 20% increase, which is $90 a year for our customers. That $90 increase brings in $342,000, which is not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things when you're talking about a $2 million improvement. The annual rate would be $540 per EDU, but I always check to make sure our rates are aligned with the area around us. And you can see, even with the $90 increase, if you were a Tidewater, Rehoboth, or Artesian customer, we're still below those as well. All right, only just a couple more slides left. So the five-year capital plan, just like the water or the general fund, you'll see here we use assessment fees to cover our costs. So most of these are new districts coming on. And when a new district comes on, we charge an assessment fee to pay for that debt. You guys see those bond issuances almost monthly sometimes coming to you. And you'll see that most of that down at the bottom, the 2027, 40% of that has to do with those new districts going forward. I do have major upgrades at Inland Bays, Piney Neck, Wolf Neck. You all heard about that from Mr. Harmer at the workshop.
Is any of this forgivable from USDA?
It is, again, if the MHI is, AMI is 1.5% of their income. So we still have to issue the debt, because until you finish the project, it's not forgivable. So, however, what you see here.
Can we anticipate any forgiveness, or is that just something you wait?
This, what you see here, is actually none of the forgivable is showing up here. This is what is being charged. Correct. If it's forgivable, we don't account for it as, because we have some districts coming on, like Countryside Hamlet, that you won't see that on here because we're not going to charge them, because it's all forgivable.
Right.
But here's all the rates. So we have so many different customers in so many areas to cover those costs. So this is the unforgivable portion of it. But as more customers come on, and we're finishing out the projects, their debt's been paid off, you'll see that we do lower these rates. So I'm ending on the slide to show that we do lower our rates. You'll see there's 8 districts there that their rates are going to go down this year. There's no new districts that are going to be finishing up as well, but these are all the ones that are out there that are still paying off their debt. So that is it. We will have a public hearing on June 16th. If anybody has any comments or questions, if they just email budget@sussexcountyde.gov, I will get it and I will respond.
Wait, we're doing this again?
Anybody have any questions for me? I tried to make that one shorter, right? Did I make it?
That was a serious question. We're doing this again.
Nothing changed from the right.
Okay. Everything's online for anybody that wants to see it.
Yeah, so now that I'm done speaking, it should now be online. We kind of hold it until you have it.
Yeah.
So
general public,
the presentation plus the big budget book that has even more details than my slides do is all going to be online.
Online.
Finance. When you're done with the questions, then I have to read the short titles for you guys to introduce the ordinances. So.
Okay. Any questions? Okay.
You guys still with me? Okay. The first one is, I'm going to make sure these are in order on here, an ordinance establishing the annual operating budget for fiscal year 2027.
You're just introducing this?
Just introducing it.
I'll introduce
it. Mr. Okay. Raleigh introduces it.
All right. The second one is an ordinance establishing annual service charges, annual assessment rates for collection and transmission and or treatment, and connection charges for all Sussex County water and sanitary sewer districts.
Introduce it.
Mr. Riley introduces it.
And then the last one is the school fee ordinance. An ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 62, Article 3, Section 62-7, entitled Fees for Permits and Applications, to add a new section, 62-7J, which shall establish a school surcharge on building permit applications to generate revenue for capital improvements for local school districts and Sussex Technical High School.
I pushed it along this long, I'll introduce it.
Mr. McCarron introduces it.
I'll co-introduce it.
That is it for me.
Thank you. Great work.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Gina.
You're the best.
Very enlightening and reminiscent of the first
take a vacation.
Okay, next is the administrator's report. Mr. Lawson.
Got it right here. Administrator's report from May 19th. Item one, a reminder, county offices will be closed on Monday, May 25th to observe the Memorial Day holiday. In addition, council will not meet on Tuesday, May 26th. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be June 2nd.
Okay. Thank you. Next is introduction of proposed ordinances.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I have six. First one is in Mr. McCarron's district, an ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for solar arrays to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Sussex County containing 39.76 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
The next one is also in Mr. McCarron's district. An ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district and a C1 general commercial district for solar arrays to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Sussex County containing 19.74 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
And the next one is also in Mr. McCarron's district, an ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for solar arrays to be located on a portion of a certain parcel of land lying and being in Sussex County containing 185.96 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
The next one is also in Mr. McCarron's district, an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for solar arrays to be located on certain parts of land lying and being in Sussex County containing 31.3 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
The next one's in Mr. Riley's district, an ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for solar arrays to be located on certain parts of land lying and being in Sussex County containing 67.23 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
And the last one is also Mr. Riley's district, an ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for solar arrays to be located on certain parts of land lying and being in Sussex County containing 498.53 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it. I guess somebody's been busy out selling the solar arrays.
Solar farms are, yeah.
A comment on that. We do group those together. A lot of times the same companies and engineers will represent. So instead of bringing them in staggered, we'll bring them in as a group. Another comment, I know there was a discussion at the planning zoning level about the frequency of these solar arrays coming before you. They have data that they discuss. I think we should probably have that discussion at the county council level as well, talking about how many have been approved, how many we've seen, how many have been built.
Right.
So you guys can also observe the trends.
Yeah.
Okay, next is council member comments.
Let's get out of here.
I had some interconnectivity comments. I'm just kidding.
Mr. McCarron?
I did say I think we heard some unique perspectives and some perspectives that we rarely hear in council chambers. Certainly we have a lot of decisions to make in front of us, but I hope, and there's nobody here from the press anymore, but I hope when this is written in the press, the story is told the way we heard it today.
Thank you. Mr. Roy? Ms. Grunebaum?
I'll pass.
Mr. Riley?
Enough's been said today.
Okay. I don't think there's any need for executive session today, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, we'll scratch that from the agenda and entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Riley, second.
Second.
Mr. McCarron. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mr. McCarron.
Yes.
Mr. Lloyd?
Yes.
Ms. Quirrenbaum?
Yes.
Minister Riley?
Yes.
I vote yes, we are now adjourned. Thank you, everyone.